Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon, and that music you're hearing is by Inner Soul. Time to wake up. Tom.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's what it's called, Ramon. I think it's, what's it called? It's The Right Time. That's the name of the song.
Yeah, I should know better because I grew up with the guy.
Okay, well, before we get going with Crystal tonight, I think we need to go over a couple of things. If you guys been to the website lately, you'll notice that right on the very top of the website, we have a contest going on in the forums. So jump on over to the forums and just sign up on the forums, and you are automatically entered into the contest. And the prize happens to be a signed copy of Who Are We Really 102. Absolutely fantastic book. If you guys get an opportunity to either pick that book up or happen to win it, you will thoroughly enjoy it. Ramon and I do work on a donation basis here. We are blue-collar guys and both work for a living, and everything that we do here on the website and on BBS is all out of our own pockets. So you guys have the ability and the desire to drop us a couple bucks, we would greatly appreciate it. Also want to welcome Nigeria to our listener base. We are now up to 54 countries. And,
yay!
Ramon always likes to yay on those. another thing that we started doing about a month ago is Ramon and I have started offering our gifts to anybody who is in need. Ramon has a gift for healing, and I do tarot. So there is a page on our website if you guys would like to get a reading or need some healing. Please help yourself. We are here to serve, and we try to do what we can to help out where we can. And we don't charge for it. We ask that you pay it forward, or if you feel compelled to make a donation, that's fine too. But that's part of our thing for helping out. So who we got? Well, we know who we got. Go ahead, Ramon. bring her on in.
We have someone who's been on the show several times. And someone we just love to harass. Let's welcome onto the show, Crystal Clark. Yay!
Hey, guys. Yay! Hey, how are you guys doing?
Pretty good. I just want to give out, we will be taking live phone calls in the second hour, so please hold the phone calls. But if you need to step out and you still want to listen to us, you can listen via cell phone at 712-432-0075, and the access code is 652957. One more time, that's 712-432-0075. Access code is 652957. You won't be able to call in, but you'll be able to listen to us and go on the run. Crystal.
Yeah.
So we tried to get this interview. We were going to do a pre-recorded for this week again, and we tried to get this in while I was in California, and I was down there for work and using my laptop and tried recording, and it came out absolutely horrible. So we decided, well, we better do this show live. The universe is telling us that what we did there was not what we were supposed to do. So we decided to do a live show this week, and here we are, which is, I believe, Crystal, this is your first live show, isn't it?
It is. How exciting.
Yeah. your followers and fans will have an opportunity to ask you some questions, which is awesome. So,
yeah.
Another thing that happened to me this week, I was just thinking about things like I have a tendency to do quite often. I was thinking about the as above, so below. And I started looking at, I was looking at our world, and actually I was looking at the compartmentalization that's in our government. And
they don't hide anything from us, Tom, do they?
I know, but then when I was looking at that, I was like, well, it popped into my head, as above, so below. And I was trying to make heads or tails of this, and I was like, okay, how does that apply? What, I mean, what does that make the above? I mean, how is that compartmentalized? I don't know. It's one that I'm still going to be going over in my mind, I'm sure, for a little while, trying to figure this one out. But Crystal, what are your views on that?
You know, talk about synchronicity. I was actually researching the proper meaning of some words that we use all the time a few days ago for an article that I was going to write. And these are actually connected to what you just asked. It's really funny. And they're just everyday words, but, like, for example, the universe. A lot of people use that word, but what is a verse, right? What does a verse really mean? And this is so funny. I'm going to read you the definition, okay? It says, a line or body of metrical writing, one of the short divisions into which a chapter of the Bible is traditionally divided. And the word metrical means of or relating to measurement. And, of course, the synonyms for that verse are lyric, rune, R-U-N-E, which is interesting, song, and poem. Now, if you look at the word rune, the definition is characters of alphabets used by German peoples from the 3rd to the 13th century, associated with mystery and magic, poems or songs, and verses. Now, what's interesting about some of these words that we just looked at is metrical, especially because it's talking about a type of division, which again is compartmentalization, right?
Right.
So when we talk about the universe, we're talking about one compartment. So is there a multiverse? Sure. I mean, there's that really, it's really, really profound statement in the scripture that says, in my Father's house are many mansions. And I often wonder if people really understand how deep that goes. And the sacred sciences very much relates this back to us in that you're just kind of moving up the scale. So it is compartmentalized in a sense in terms of if we go back to the alphabet definition, so a rune, right? So each letter has its own song in terms of energy. And when you put them together in different combinations, you get a word. Now, this word has its own frequency or energy song. And then when you move up the scale, if you put different combinations of words together, you get a sentence. And then you get paragraphs. And then you get chapters. And then you get books. And then you get libraries. And, of course, this is very similar to what we refer to as the Akashic Records, right? And, you know, even Jacob's Ladder, or what Edgar Cayce would refer to as in visions, he saw these angels moving up and down this ladder, and they're kind of like different dimensions. So it's kind of funny because so much of what we do down here is a reflection of higher truths, and we just don't see it because we're always looking through the left brain. You know, we just, compartmentalization is important in that everybody has their own individual identity. You have your identity, I have my identity, Ramon has his identity, but it doesn't just affect us, and it's the same with the planets. You know, each planet has a very, very special song, and in the past, this was referred to as Harmonis' Mundi, or Music of the Spheres, where you can, the planets actually have songs that you can hear. But we also know through astrology that they have very specific energies that they impart to us. So if you get, you know, this planet conjuncting with this planet, you get different energies that come in. And then we down here, because there's always this feedback loop, also experience that because we are connected to the planets in the solar system. So everything is really connected this way. So as above, so below, I mean, there are so many different ways to look at it. For example, I know that there are some researchers who have, they will, for example, interpret revelation through astronomy or even biblical characters in terms of the 12 apostles. They'll say, well, these 12 apostles actually represented the 12 houses of astrology. So, and others may interpret that and say, well, then the 12 apostles didn't really exist. It was just a story to help us understand that something is happening in the stars that affects us, but in fact they did exist and were reflections of the solar system that we live in. As above, so below. And it's very much the same way with us in terms of having astrological signs. The day, you know, the day that you're born, really the way I look at it is the programming, because you're talking about energy. And it may sound strange, but if people can couple this to the idea of what Masaru Emoto shows in terms of how words can affect water, you're talking about programming an element. You're, in this case, you're programming the water with your thoughts, which is an energy. But as we're being born, and this is something that Edgar Cayce talked a lot about in the manuscript that I have, there are many, many, many different layers of co-creation happening at the moment of conception and also during the nine-month period after. So in some cases, what sex the child is going to turn out to be actually depends on which partner is the more dominant in the relationship, which is kind of strange and flies in the face of a lot of what science says. But so it's not just the thoughts and emotions of the parents at the moment of conception, but you also have the patterns of the planets in our solar system that are also programming the DNA with all this energy. There's quite a few different layers involved, energy layers. And what happens is the DNA is partially programmed by the movement of the planets in our solar system, and it stops at the moment of birth, and then that becomes your astrological sign. And because you had such an interesting relationship with the movement of these planets during your physical development, you become tied to these planets in a way that this is very much tied to not just astrology, but it helps to also look at numerology in this sense, because numerology is another layer in terms of your birth date. But numerology is generally a reflection of your abilities, and astrology is a reflection of urges, meaning the urge that you will have in terms of how you choose to use those abilities. So they kind of go hand in hand. And even places have this going on. Everything has its own frequency. So, it's just so endless. There's so many ways to explain it. This is very similar to a stargate. And in Revelation, a lot of people don't know this, but the seven churches in Revelation are seven centers. They're glandular centers in the body, and these have their counterparts in the stars. So when a person says, well, I'm going to open up my chakra, because these, even though these are physical centers in the body, they also are energy centers. So when we open a chakra, for example, Edgar Cayce said that every single planet in our solar system is its own dimension. And that kind of goes back to compartmentalization, right? They all kind of have their own unique history and energy and story. So when we open chakras, we're actually kind of moving through these, in one way you could call them stargates, right? Our body is a literal reflection of the solar system that we live in. And it was designed that way on purpose, which I think is really important. I think a lot of people are missing that. And in fact, I was to kind of go into a little bit different area, I was looking at transhumanism lately. Are you guys familiar with that at all?
Oh, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Excuse me. Well, the idea behind transhumanism is that it goes really, really deep, and it would take a long time to get into it fully, but again, it's very similar to splitting timelines in that you have people who are still following kind of the eugenics theme that, again, want to see a separation of races, where you would have a superior race and then you would have a slave race on our planet. And there are a few different ways that they want to accomplish this, and one of them, of course, is genetic modification. But the other part of it is technology. They want to merge man with machine, and you'll have a whole new meaning to the haves and the have-nots. You'll have people that are you know, really, literally superhuman, beyond human, and then you'll have us humans, or so they think. But what they're missing is that man already has a path to evolution. That's what this, the entire program that we're in provides that path. Every planet in our solar system has a unique energy that it's a very symbiotic relationship. So in a way, we are giving life to those energies as a physical being, but those energies are also giving us life loop that always happens. So we're really kind of helping each other out. But the path to evolution is very much tied up in the sacred science, and people who want to go down that road to transhumanism are going to miss out on it. It's not the rightful path of evolution. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
It's bypassing the natural system that we have. And I think we talked about this a little bit before in terms of evolutionary pressure. And because all of the planets that we have now, yeah, they have cycles, but a lot of people understand that we're coming to the end of these cycles. So we've kind of been through every cycle once already. For evolutionary pressure to take place, it requires new energy. And that would have to come from outside. And I mentioned before, I don't really know where it's going to come from. I only understand that it would need to be an outside source. You would need to introduce a new type of energy, because otherwise it's you're going in circles. You're not. So that is the path to evolution. And I know that a lot of people are really freaked out, you know, by, oh, you know, Nibiru or this comet or that comet or a super wave, but wherever the energy comes from, in terms of that evolutionary pressure, it's energy that we need to have. And what was really neat, I thought, was you sent me a video, Tom, a few days ago about this woman. I never heard of her before, so I hope I'm getting her name right. Was it Grandma
Chandra?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And a lot of people may look at that and say, well, this is more New Age psychobabble. But it was really beautiful, I thought, and it made a lot of sense to me, what she said. Does that mean I think she's right? How do I know if, you know, if this comet is really going to come on April 22nd or whatever it was? But would it make sense that it would? It does make sense. And it does make sense that she said this comet has passed through stargates to get here. I think she said 10 of them.
Yeah.
And she also said that it would be depositing material that we don't have here, right? As kind of a seeding project. And you know, based on everything that we just talked about, it makes a kind of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. It also sounds like she's talking about the Hopi prophecy, the Blue Kachina. Isn't it described in the same way?
Similar.
You know, whether they're all the same or not, I don't know, because it could be multiple events. It could be more than one thing. So I really don't know. But, you know, even Edgar Cayce talked about a star that we would see, a literal star. And this star was not some kind of death star. It was the star of hope. It was, you know, it was not, you know, a lot of people talk about Nibiru. Now, it's funny because I was actually going to offer to you guys to talk about Nibiru. And the only time I've ever talked about it was with Mel Fabregas on Veritas, in that I don't personally believe that Nibiru means planet. Now, does that mean there's not a planet out there? No. And the reason for that is, you know, being an empath, even though I'm a really left-brained person, The empathy really kind of helps balance it out, because you just get feelings about things. You just kind of understand things without knowing why you understand them. And one thing that I never particularly got worked up over was Nibiru. I really couldn't understand why, but I just never felt like that was an issue that I personally needed to pay attention to.
Same here.
And the same with 2012 person. Those two things I know create a lot of fear. But I personally did not ever feel that about either of those issues. Now, about 6 months ago, I came across a website, and if I remember it right, it's called SitchinIsWrong.com. And this fellow went back through all the Sumerian tablets and even provides links to where anybody, I think they were put online by some college, all of the tablets, all of them. And you can go read them yourself, and he says that the word Nibiru is not on any of those tablets. It's not there. Now, does that mean that Zechariah Sitchin lied? I don't think he did, and I'll tell you why. Because sometimes people know something that they maybe are afraid to just come right out and say. So we're talking about kind of a Hansel and Gretel moment, right? I personally have found texts that I also purposely don't name, that very specifically talked about opening, how stargates themselves, they unlock things in a way that passage is made possible from one dimension to another, and that is what Nibiru was. It was not a planet of the crossing, it was a way of the crossing. And to me, that made sense. So when I came across this website that said Nibiru is not used in any of the Sumerian tablets, and they're not sure where Zechariah Sitchin got it from, in this sense, he may have actually been leaving a breadcrumb. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maybe there was a planet that he saw, and it wasn't called Nibiru, but he used the phrase Nibiru to help us see that there are other things going on, and people have just kind of missed it. And I was reminded of that again through that video that you sent me when they talked about this comet having passed through 10 stargates. Get here. So really, it's all the same technology, no matter how you want to look at it. Whether we're talking about Gregorian chants that let you resonate with an earlier version of yourself and cause healing, well, that's kind of a stargate too, if you want to look at it that way in terms of time. So it's really always the same technology, only the scale changes.
I would like to ask you a question. I recently finished reading a book. And one of the major things that they talk about is how certain people, when they become really advanced in the spirituality, they're able to, I don't know if time travel is the correct word, but consciously time travel. So they can go back to a earlier part of themselves, or even change their conscious onto, like, for example, a bird 20 years ago and see what they want to see from that point of view. From the text you've read and gone over, have you seen anything about that?
You know, I personally have not, in terms of being that specific in doing it. But there was, you know, I don't talk about ETs a lot because I personally don't see them as a threat. I see them as far more of a spiritual entanglement in our lives. I don't see it the way a lot of other people see it, so I just don't talk about it a lot. But one of the neatest books that I ever read in terms of UFO abductions was a book called The Watchers by Raymond Fowler. And it was a story about this woman, Biddy Andreasen. And she was shown some really incredible things. And I have to say that from my perspective, she was a modern-day Enoch in what she was shown. And there was this one particular episode, and I read this when I was, I want to say 19. It was a very long time ago. And she was in her trailer, and they would take her, they would pop her soul out of her body. They would cause her to have an OBE. And during this one particular episode, she was in her trailer reading a book, and they came and they did that, and while her soul turned around and looked at her body, and her body was there turning the pages of a book that she was reading, and she asked them, well, how is that possible if I'm here? And they explained to her that her body was being watched over because everything we do in a physical form leaves grooves in time like a record, and that these grooves can be tracked and traced. But you can trace them forwards and you can trace them backwards. And what they were showing her was so important that they didn't want anybody to be able to track and trace where they were taking her and what they were showing her. you know, she was allowed to come back and share the information, but the actual journey as far as where she went physically wasn't allowed to be recorded. And this is very similar to what Edgar Cayce talks about, going back to Revelation again, in the Book of Life. That's your Book of Life. It's the Akashic Records. What we do is recorded on the skein of time and space. So would it surprise me that a person could do that, that they could go back and watch? It, that doesn't surprise me at all, not even a little.
If I can share a quick dream. So sure. This happened a while back, but I met these, they were like half human, half feline, and one of them, she showed me in the dream, she showed me how to, what you do is you focus and you look at your hand, and you focus, and then you try to focus so much in your hand to the point where you start seeing the cells. And when you get to that point, she was telling me that you're able to move through time, but that you can't really move that much. She was saying like you can move like 5 minutes, 10 minutes back or forth in time. But then there were these guys, they were like almost like Star Trek, like timekeepers that didn't want her passing that information. So what they would do is they would grab the soul that didn't belong in the time period and put them in this like vortex kind of thing and send them back to their own time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not hard to see why they wouldn't want us doing that, because not everybody who would do that would do it for the right reasons, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, if you could go back and you could see what stock, you know, would soar, you would buy it early, you know, you're talking about changing timelines and in a way that's cheating. So I can see why, you know, they don't want people doing that. Or you could change, you know, as far as who won wars, you know, I mean, everything could change in terms of the butterfly effect, right?
Yeah.
But it could be that, you know, each of us has an oversoul. It's kind of, it's our God mind in a way. It's not really separate from the God mind. And that's what we mean a lot of the time when we say we're working with our higher self, which is what Edgar Cayce did when he would do readings for people. He would work with the oversoul. Now, if there were times when people would ask him questions and he wouldn't give them the answer because he understood that they were not at a place where they were going to use it properly. So are there people who can do it? I'm sure there are. In your particular case, in your dream, maybe they just want to start you out small. And not everything works for the same people, you know. They may have given you, because everybody's mind is different, and the mind really is the controller of everything. You know, the neurons and synapses and connections in my brain aren't exactly the same as yours. So we don't all see the world the same way, and we don't all respond to it the same way. So it wouldn't surprise me if you got a very customized education in your dream. I would say that it, you know, if you're seeing individuals like that, I would say they were real. I would say this was not a case where the other individuals in the dream were necessarily you. Although they could have been a future version of you, there's really no way to know, right? But, you know, you could have gotten a little training lesson. Have you tried it?
Not really. Because I guess I've been thinking kind of the same way you were saying with the whole butterfly effect and stuff. But I'll let you know when I do.
Yeah, I mean, if they're telling you can only go back a few minutes either way through this technique, I would take it at face value, because if they felt like you were ready for more than that, they would have shown you more than that.
Yeah.
So, and it's important that people go slow, I think, because sometimes, you know, we ask for things without really understanding what it is we've asked for, and then we get it, and we're like, oh, well, that wasn't really smart, you know, so, you know, but I think that's what's really important about the lesson in the dream, is that they obviously care about you, right? They're not saying, yeah, go for it, tear it up. They're being responsible, which I think says a lot.
Yeah, that reminds me when you say, you know, be careful what you ask for. When I went to East City, me and Tom went last year, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to have a contact guy. I want to meet an actual physical being. And around 3 o'clock in the morning, I open my eyes and I see this green light flashing. And I go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then, you know, I was so scared to turn around. And this light just keeps flashing and it's flashing. And as soon as I turn around, it was the coffee pot light flashing.
Oh.
And I realize, yeah, it's like some people say, you know, you have one hand up, come over here, and the other hand, stop.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, I think the other thing is, you know, I wrote about this in the book, and we can come back to it later if you want, but there was something that Edgar Cayce said once that I didn't understand when I read it, and I skipped right over it, really. I thought, well, that's interesting. And then I was meditating and praying about something else, but then the universe really wanted to make sure I understood what this meant. And Edgar Cayce talked about those who climb up some other way, like taking a back door. And so I think in that context, it's really important for us to ask ourselves, why do you want to know how to do that? It's not the what. It's not what we want. It's why do we want it. I mean, if you really do want to, Ramon, learn how to go 5 minutes forward and 5 minutes backward in time, why do you want to know that? That's now, you don't have to answer me. I'm not asking you to. I'm saying that that's a question you should ask yourself before you do it. You know, I tried remote viewing once, and I got it right off the bat. It was a show I was listening to where the man had something in the envelope, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's the gold foil spill. I just knew it right away. I've never tried beyond that to go remote view anything, and I mean anything, because I can't ever really find anything that I think is that would be that exciting to me. Does that make sense? Like, well, you could go to Mars and you could go to the moon, and yeah, but I don't live there. I live here, so it's the why. I guess that's my thing for me, especially personally, is because I understand that I can never really come up with a good reason to go do all that stuff. You know, because yeah, I believe people can do it. I don't think it's a big deal, but I think that it needs to be used properly, and I just don't see a use for me personally to go do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, but just because I don't doesn't mean, you know, if you want to do that, maybe that's what you personally are going to need to have the confidence to take the next step in your journey. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know, because that's a very personal thing. But I think you should definitely give it some thought and make sure that you understand why you would want to do that and how it could be beneficial.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to, for me personally, like OBEs and anything like that, remote viewing, it's always been more the explorer in me. You know, I want to go see the new far lands, and unfortunately, American Airlines doesn't take me into the next dimension,
no.
You know. Mm-hmm. Or what is Dimension Airlines?
Right. Yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. So I guess you just answered your own question. That's why you would want to know, right? You would want to explore. You know, it's just the explorer in you. And that's perfectly fine. But I think a lot of people do this stuff because they hear people say, well, you're not spiritually advanced. You don't know your past lives, or, you know, if you don't, you know, time travel in your dreams or whatever. But there's a purpose for everything, and I think that people miss that part. Why, you know, why do you want to do it?
Yeah, I don't think everybody's ready to know their past life, because it can really affect you in a very negative way if you're not ready for it.
Right.
You know, that's very true, and, you know, it's funny. I've never wanted to know who I was in a past life, and not because I'm afraid of seeing, you know, who I was or what I did, but for me personally, I can't change that. for me, this is the life that matters. This is the life that I am in right now. This is the life that I can change, and so this is the one that I focus on. So, but for some people, in order for them to continue their journey, they have to know that that information is available. And did I tell you guys this story? I was actually shown once in a dream who I was in a past life. Did I tell you that story?
No. Please do.
It was really funny because I didn't ask because I really don't want to know. Like I said, I'm not that adventurous, I guess. I just don't, for me personally, it doesn't seem practical. But in this dream, I was suddenly in a high school that I went to. And in this high school, it was three stories. And in the corner where the stairs were, it was all windows. It was very, very bright. And I was on the bottom floor, and I went up about 10 steps to the landing. And when I turned, it suddenly wasn't my high school anymore. It was these huge, wide marble steps. And at the top of the landing, it was a library. And I could see down all these rows of books. But there was a woman who had her desk right there near the edge. And she had this book on her desk. And it just looked really old and ancient. And it was very, very large. And it was just really neat. And I thought, ooh, I really want to read that one. That looks neat. And as soon as I thought that to myself, there was an old man halfway down the stairs with a book in his hand, and it was that book. And it wasn't the old man, you know, the old beard kind of Gandalf kind of thing. It was just a normal old man. He had on Dockers and a short sleeve shirt and glasses with a short haircut. And he had the book in his hand, and he held it out to me, and when I grabbed it, he didn't let go. And he looked at me and he cocked his head sideways and he said, Ptolemy. And I said, Ptolemy. And he shook his head no and he said, Ptolemy. And when I said it right, he nodded okay and he let go and let me take the book. So from what I understand, the message that I got was that's who I was in a past life.
Ptolemy?
And I thought, oh, okay. Yeah, and I thought, okay, well, I should go look him up and see what kinds of things he did. And this is what's really so funny about it. When I went to look him up, I found out there was more than one. You know, there was Ptolemy the first and the second and the third, and I don't know which one it was. So, you know, it didn't really do me any good. But, you know, the journey is different for everyone. I don't feel like I'm missing anything. You know, but some people really do. And also, I did have a little bit of help through Margaret because she explained to me that in this lifetime, you know, the way she explained karma to me and everything, which is in the book if people want a more in-depth version of what I'm going to say, but she explained to me that there were two lifetimes I've had. I only have two in the box where I was supposed to do something in those lifetimes and I didn't do it. And I've brought them both with me in this lifetime. So if I can complete both of them in this lifetime, then I get to get off the loop, which I'm really excited about. So I'm trying not to mess it up. I'm sure you can imagine, but
no pressure.
So yeah, I know. Really, I know. So for me, So I guess for me personally, that may be another reason that I don't feel the need to know who I was in a past life because she flat out told me the two that you're missing are the writer and the healer. So the rest is history, as they say, right? I can change the here and now. I can't change the rest. So that's my focus.
Oh, it makes sense. And wait, yeah.
Well, you know, I found that what I've seen is if people just follow their passion, what really, really, really feels good and right to them, then they get taken to that place that they need to work on.
Yeah, that's the key. You know, there's.
It feels more like it gets thrown in your face.
No, it's not something. Well, it's not something that me personally. It's not something that I've ever worried about. I've ever gone, am I doing it right this time? Am I doing it right this time? You know, sure, that question's popped through my mind, but it is. It's not one that has ever, you know. Put that little dark spot in my heart or my soul that created a sense of worry on whether or not I was doing the things correctly because I don't know if I don't feel right with it, it doesn't resonate with me. And I'm not honest with myself. If I'm if I'm forcing myself to do something, then I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me if I'm forcing myself to do something. Even if somebody were to tell me, oh, you're supposed to be this, or you're supposed to be doing that, whatever. If it doesn't feel right to me, then I'm not being honest myself.
Yeah, that's
very true. Yeah, I mean, there's a few different ways you could look at that. I mean, you know, I didn't believe the woman when she told me, because I was so far off in make lots of money la-la land that there was no way I was even going to consider it. But then, like I said, some events happened in my life, and I wasn't really left with a choice to a degree. And I thought, well, I'll try it. And the journey that I went through was magnificent. I mean, it was so life-changing. So for me personally, yeah, I'm definitely doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is a conversation that I have with a lot of people, because people talk about the power of intention a lot. But the part of that they don't get is that there's a time and a season for everything. And sometimes you have to let go of intentions, because the intentions get in the way. So, for example, for me personally on the journey, the real magic happened for me when I could, you know, figuratively and in some cases even literally get on my knees and say, I don't know what I need.
Right.
Instead of saying, well, I need this or I need that, you just say, show me what I need. What do I need to get where it is I've agreed to go? How do I get there? And then the real changes happen. And I mean real changes, and not just, you know, profound. I mean, that's when, you know, stuff was being downloaded to me in my dreams, but it was also when I had to go back and do an inventory, as they say, where you have to go back and look at your life and recognize every situation you've been in where you've either done something to someone else or they've done something to you, and that has affected you in a way that's holding you back. And then you either have to forgive the people that are, because it's harming you. You're the one who holds that. You're the only one it harms. If it's a forgiveness issue. But in other cases, if it was because you just see clearly the things that you didn't want to see, you suddenly see, and it has a real effect where it's not where you feel like, well, I have to go do this. You understand that it's right. And for me, there were people, one individual that I actually went back and apologized to, because I didn't understand during the episode that this happened with me and this other individual. I was going through a lot in my life, and they were going through a lot in their life, and we just weren't really gelling well, and maybe didn't really treat each other very well at the time. And it bothered me, because in the book I explain it as stains on our robe. You know, if our soul was a white robe, and all of these little things that we do or do to others, they put these little stains on our robe. And to stand blameless doesn't just mean that you haven't done anything wrong. It also means that you're not standing there with blame for others. So it's always a two-way street. So for me personally, that really is what helped me understand what Edgar Cayce meant about people who climb up some other way. Because the proper way is to deal with all of that. There are very succinct phases that an individual goes through that have to be mastered, or the next ones don't really come out right. And that was one of them. So as far as the power of intention goes, you know, intention is great. You can do a lot with that, but there comes a point where you have to let go of the intention, because you have to be able to admit that you don't know if what you're intending is even right for you.
Right.
To change a little bit, there's something I've been wanting to ask you, Crystal, and that is, I know you're working on the third book, and I was wondering, because we have a few minutes left before the next hour,
okay.
I was wondering if you can give us a small glimpse of the third book coming up. It's 103, Who Are We Really? Is that correct?
You know, actually, I haven't. It's part of the Who Are We Really series, but they all have subtitles. So the first one was Return of the Shaman, and the second one is When Tomorrow Comes. And I haven't actually released the name of the third one yet. And I, so I'm going to kind
Tom
of pull that back.
Tom and Ramon's Adventures.
Yeah, you guys are great. That would be funny. it's just, in the second book, which really is the beginning of a brand new adventure with the sacred science, it's about, you know, splitting timelines. If we went down this path, what would it be like? And if we went down this path, what would it be like? And then something really magnificent happens, though, where the timelines cross in a couple of places to alert the people on each side that there is another side. And in the timeline where things aren't great, it gives them hope. And in the timeline where things are great, it reminds them that the people that they love need help. So the third book is more about these people in the future timeline going back and helping people. I don't know if I think I can't say too much more about it, but that's really the gist of it, is explaining to these people. And not everybody is really thrilled about it, because these entities, which are future versions of ourselves, and look a little bit different, so we may even refer to them as aliens, so they don't look that different, but people are kind of missed because they make it very clear they don't come back to fix it for us. They come back to show us how, by reminding us especially how to love again. So I think that's probably all I want to give up.
Yeah, well, I finally had an opportunity to sink my teeth into the second book, and I'm about a good solid, just about halfway through it now, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm waiting with anticipation to see how Tom's voyage goes. I just.
That's right. Oh, my God. I wrote that before I met you guys. And the main character, yeah. One of the main characters, his name is Tom.
Yeah. So, yeah. Obviously, I'm seeing some synchronicity in there somewhere, right?
Maybe so. I'm sorry, Ramon. I'll tell you what, in the third book, I'll throw in a Ramon.
Don't worry about it.
Don't want you to be completely left out there, Ramon.
Funny, I could throw this in really quick. You know what, there's one bookstore that actually has the book listed under horror. Under horror. And I thought, you know what, the universe works in mysterious ways, right? So I'm not going to complain or change it, because there are people who would never read a book like that unless they think it's horror.
Yeah, true.
I mean, you know, and the second timeline does have some creepy stuff in it, you know, as far as I don't know how I'm trying to release, you know, creatures and there, you know, some evil kind of entities, if you will. But it's not horror, but I just thought it was kind of funny.
Well, got to leave it there. Somebody's going to buy it because they think it's horror. And they'll
Yeah.
And they'll be shocked and surprised.
Works in a very mysterious way.
Yeah, well, they're going to read the first half and think, well, where the hell is all the horror? You know, and then they'll read the second time and they'll be like, oh, okay.
Well, if they truly read the first half and you know, their eyes aren't open, this may be one, maybe a book that starts them on their path.
That's you know, what I thought.
It's just universe has guided them to it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a bizarre place we live in. So. So okay, well, we are going to be taking a short break here. And we get about a 5-minute break. I think we're going to get Seth to play as a song during that. And then when we come back, we are going to open the lines and let all you people call in. Ask your own questions of Crystal. Let's see. We've got 888-815-9756. That's the toll-free. And then there's 530-327-7602, 530-413-4501, and 503-413-4522.
So, quick question, Tom. When are we going to choose a winner for Crystal's book?
We're going to choose that next week. So I put that on there, the deadline of the 20th. So we probably won't announce it in next week's show. I believe, let's see who we got next week.
Sonia.
Sonia. Okay, Sonia's next week. So it'll probably be announced during the Hazel. No, Hazel's next week, right? Hazel's.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Hazel's the 20th.
Hazel's next week, and it'll be announced during Sonia's show. We'll announce it during that show. So, plus, whoever wins will know about it before then. But
yay!
So.
Yay.
So, is Seth ready to cue us up, or?
Yeah. I think he's on coffee. Oh, all right. Okay, well, we'll be back in about 5 minutes, guys. And I don't know. I asked Seth to give us a surprise here, so.
Yeah. Let's see what he has.
All right. We'll see you in a few minutes. There's joy in the morning light, and there's joy, 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 joy in your life. There is joy in the morning light, and there's joy, 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 joy in your life. There is joy in the morning light, there is joy in your life. There is joy in the morning light, there is joy.
Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to Dr. Fred Bell in the Health and Sciences Show on VBSRadio.com. Tune in or be tuned out.
welcome back. We do have the phone lines open now. But to start off, Crystal, there is a lot of worry out there right now. I mean, people are looking out at all the things that are happening in the world and things that are even happening in their own personal lives. And there's just everybody, I mean, people I see are just worried about this, worried about that. The fear has been growing in people. And I personally know through every single negative experience I've gone through in my life, there's always been a silver lining. Can you lay out, do you have a process that you use for going through those experiences and picking out that silver lining?
Well, I don't know that it's a process per se, but it's a realization, and the realization is very, very simple. It's that I have a soul. So I am not Crystal Clark. I am a soul having the experience of Crystal Clark, because I chose this experience, and I didn't just choose to, you know, that's part of being a co-creator, is always the feedback loop. And it's very much related to what we talked about before, in that we chose a very specific program. Our bodies were programmed to give us the kind of experience that we wanted to have, but it's not just about what we would take from the experience, it's also what we would give to the experience. So I know that there's a lot of fear out there, but the fear, I would have to say the number one fear is death. Now, I don't know why people are afraid to die. I mean, I really honestly don't, because this is just, it's, I don't want to downplay it too much, because it is very much like a virtual reality program. But I think people do need to understand that what we do in this physical world imprints on the soul, in that we will always remember the experience. But, you know, the fear for me is, I'm sorry, the reason that I don't have a fear about all this stuff going on is that I know what I came here to give, and I have a pretty good idea what I came here to receive. Of course, the prices are always nice. But beyond that, that's the end of my attachment to this place. In the second book, I don't know if you got this far yet, Tom, but there are children creating solar systems.
Right, yeah.
And I put that in there because people get so trapped into, I'm just this body, it's this one life, it's all I get, and I'm going to, you know, cheat and steal and rob everybody to make the most of it, and on and on. And a lot of people say they know that they have a soul, but they don't behave like it, especially when the fear kicks in. So if a person is sitting there scared to death that they're going to die, maybe they need to ask themselves, do they really believe they have a soul? And recenter themselves back to the true self, which is the soul self, not the body self. And for me, that's how I look at it. I know it sounds really simplistic, but the reason that I put those stories in the book is that I want people to understand that there's something beyond this. You know, there's something, there's other experiences out there. And to get so caught up in the idea that you don't ever want to leave this experience, I think is a grievous error for an individual. Because, there's a lot of really beautiful planets out there. You know, what if when we leave here, we graduate this program, we're actually creating them? You know, that's a lot more fun than, being president. I mean, I would think, you know what I mean? We're trying to think of something really cool that people may aspire to be in the material world, but there's just more. There's a lot more going on.
That kind of reminds me of an interview I heard on Red Ice Radio with George Kovacevic. Thank you. Tom always corrects me on my pronunciations. He was talking about how he met this woman who said that in her next life, she was going to come back as a planet and not she wasn't going to take the, well, she is going to be physical, but not in a, you know, not in the way she is now, but in her next life, she'll be a planet. So I'm wondering,
That's really neat. You know, we talked about that a little bit in the last session that didn't really come out. To be a planet, I think that this is another thing. People, you know, keep in mind my goal is to always expand the mind to greater and farther horizons. And when I talked about last time the phrase in the Bible about entities that don't transgress their commands, and that sounds, you know, so authoritarian and patriarchal, but in reality, what that means is that you have to, we are learning here. This is how I look at it, another way I look at it. We are learning how to be creators, full-on creators, not just co-creators, in this experience. And when we learn that properly, then we can move on to literally become suns and stars. But if we don't learn the lesson of valuing life, then how can we do that? Because we will, the commandment would be, for example, that the sun's commandment is you need to come up every day, right? This is your area. This is your rotation. This is what you're supposed to do. And as long as you keep doing this, you're going to sustain life, perhaps millions and billions and even trillions of lives. But if the sun one day decides, well, you know, I'd rather be a moon, or I'd rather be a shooting star, then all of a sudden, all of this life that depended on this one being can no longer exist. And I think that's another really important message for people, is that people chose their families, they chose their body type, they chose so much of their experience, they chose when they would be born. In some cases, they even chose their name, because these all create, it's like a computer program. It's all this code that creates you and gives you the experience that you wanted to experience. But again, being a co-creator really means understanding co-creation and how you are participating in that. And we all agreed to come here and participate in different ways. And this is also tied into the as above, so below that we talked about earlier, because the moon does what it does, the sun does what it does, and Venus and Mars do what they do. Well, down here, I do what I do, and you guys do what you do. But we still are working together in some way. We are still giving back to life, but we do it as individuals. And I think a lot of people get hung up on that, too. You know, I don't want to be part of a collective because the beehive mentality is evil and all of this. Well, that's not really necessarily a good thing for a free-willed being to behave like a bee in a hive, but at least recognize what it is that you came here to contribute, because it's not the same as everyone else. And I think that has a lot to do with why so many people are miserable, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They may not know what it is they're supposed to be doing, but they definitely know what they're doing isn't it. But then what? How do you get out of that? And, of course, that's kind of a precursor to the other phases of the journey, because once you get a sense of, okay, well, I came in here with this gift and these urges into this kind of family that helped facilitate these gifts, how can I give to the other people in this experience in a way that helps co-create it properly? Which, of course, is why I feel like the sacred science is so important, because there are things going on that people don't understand. If you want to co-create something, you have to understand how to do it, you know, and that's really important. It's kind of like that story that we learned before about, you know, the guy who was supposed to feed the village but didn't know you had to have water, you know. They're really simple things, to understand. You know, bioacoustic envelopes, you know, how that all works. Which also reminded me very much of that video that you sent, because in a bioacoustic envelope, they've discovered that
the sounds of the insects can bring the rain, and the songs of certain birds become the blooming mechanism in a plant. And in that video you sent with this Grandma Chandra, she was saying how the creatures in the sea have the codes, and they're calling this comet in. So it's very much that kind of thing, like a blooming mechanism, right? They're working together. We all have our own song, our own energy song. And all of this other stuff going on, yes, we are part of that, meaning that collectively we are offering our own unique flavor to the meal. But we still are our own ingredient. You know, if people are just, you know, so afraid of what's happening now, there are two really important things that they need to understand. And one of them is, from this particular perspective, we can look at HAARP. HAARP's not a good thing. And good thing, you know, things that are created like that are created to do bad things. But the human beings on this planet need to understand that every single person on this planet, all of them, are a smaller version of that HAARP. That's why it works. It works because they're using the laws.
I know that's 100% true. And me and Tom experienced this, and I always keep going back to the same story, but I'm sure you heard this story before, Crystal. Me and Tom were up at Yosemite, and it was really cloudy, and they were spraying all day, so we couldn't see anything. And around the campfire, we just cleared it up. How long did it take us, Tom? Do you remember that?
10 minutes, maybe.
Yeah.
We had a perfect circle of blue sky above us. I mean, centered directly above us. It was breathtaking.
And how did you guys do it?
With intention. We asked
pure intention.
We asked for the sky to be clear. And we laughed, and we were joking, and we were having fun, and we were drumming, and we were just having a good time. And that positive energy, we released it out to the universe, and
And actually, Mel was there as well.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, you can even ask Mel about that one.
Yeah, so he got to see it too. I mean, that's the thing. People have for so long been beaten down to the point where they're nothing but worker drones. And the only chance you have to matter is if you make a little bit more money than the other drones. You know, but that's not what we came here for. So, look, if this all goes to hell in a handbasket, and I die, a meteor strikes my house and I die, I just hope that I get to look back and go, you know what, I did right, I did good. Yeah. That, I mean, that's what matters to me, that I learned what I was supposed to, and now maybe I get to go be a solar system or a sun. You know, it's just a moment. It's just a moment. And there's just, you know, so much of what we see happening is driving people further away from the soul mind, especially even transhumanism. I mean, I was watching videos earlier today of people who are saying they cannot wait to combine their body with a machine or to be able to manipulate themselves somehow to become better.
That's the guy out of England, right?
There's tons of them. I mean, you can type in transhumanism on YouTube and go crazy for hours because there are so many people that are talking about it. But what does that say about a person who's saying, yeah, I need a machine to be better? It says they believe the lie that God lies somewhere else.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah. God doesn't lie anywhere else but in us. It comes through us or it doesn't come at all. We are the lightning rods. We're the ones that bring it here through us. So, you know, I can do, you know, the best that I can do as a human being, but I'm just one human being. So if I personally can't change everything and I don't ever expect to, you know what, I'm okay with that. As long as I'm here giving and not just taking and that I understand that every face that I look into is the face of God.
No.
That's what I see, you know. So I know why people are scared, but it really is just that very simple realization that there is no death, but there are do-overs.
I want to give out the number again.
Yeah, I know there's somebody out there with a question that they want to ask Crystal, so don't be shy.
The toll-free number for Canada and U.S. is 888-815-9756, and line 1 for you U.S., 530-327-7602. And if you're listening live from another country, use your Skype and then just dial the 800 number. And this way you'll get through. That's the way I would do to call Brooke's show. And so back to what you're saying, Crystal.
Well, you know, it is kind of short notice. I only had it posted for a couple of days on the website. But so we'll see. If it's just us, we can chat away. It's fine, but... But that's the thing. It's death, you know, death. Death is what people are afraid of. And it reminds me very much of that, again, that saying from Edgar Casey of those who climb up some other way. You're talking about people who want to cheat a death that doesn't really exist. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sorry. There's also the big fear where I grew up, the big fear I saw a lot was the fear of not having, to the point where it overtook the fear of death. And I mean, when you see some of these young teenagers do the crazy things they do, and I'm sure we've all heard the stories, we don't need to hear anymore, but you see obviously there's no fear of death there. There's the fear of not having, which I find amazing, because if they would take that same energy and put it towards something positive, just imagine the things they can do.
Fear of not being accepted by their homies, too, or their whatever you want to call them, their
peeps.
Yeah.
But, it amazes me, because you really see that they really don't have any fear of death. I mean, someone who has fear of death...
The younger generations don't, and of course that's why they're being all riled up, you know, in all of these global uprisings. You know, it's the young people. As soon as they become unemployed, they're the ones that will actually go out and hit the streets and start doing something about it.
Right.
Although, what do they do about it? And we talked about this last time. In that one. One of the books that I really loved was Whitley Strieber's book, The Key. And the stranger in the key told him this phrase. It's a very simple phrase, but it never left me. But he said, "There is no plan for you because you have no plan for yourself." And I see that everywhere. These young people, everybody, we did it too. I mean, at least I did. I think most of us did. We were born into a system that we just accepted because the other people around also just accepted it. We never got together and said, "Hey, does this look right to you?
Yeah.
Does this make sense?" And I still don't see that going on. I see them, you know, David Icke went to the Ukraine a while ago and was commenting about their Orange Revolution because they had this huge uprising and they got this guy out of there. But when he went back to do a lecture over there, it was the same guy in power again 4 years later. Because nothing's going to change if it's the same structure, because the structure doesn't work anymore. And I think that's part of the growing pains, is that we have people on the planet who are beginning to understand that it doesn't work. We're outgrowing it because we see that it doesn't work. But what do you replace it with?
Yeah.
So... You know, so we're gonna have all these revolutions around the world where all these people are going to kick their leaders out, but it's the same system that put that leader in. So I see attention being redirected away from that which matters most a lot, and I think that is very much tied into what you guys were talking about, because I went through it too when I was young, because I came from a very poor family. And it was cool until about fifth grade when everybody started comparing what they wore. And then that's, you know, who was the most popular, right? And then all of a sudden you don't matter because you don't have the money. You can't go buy, you can't be the first one to have the latest and greatest. Those are the people, you know, that everybody looks up to, which is really sad. And I think that, you know, if my husband and I, we have a saying around here. We kind of tease people, you know, behind closed doors between the two of us, you know, when we're looking at the way people behave. But the saying is, well, they've tried nothing and they're all out of ideas, right? Because people, well, I don't like that. Well, replace it with something. You know, the people aren't, they aren't doing that. And of course, that goes back to Masaru Emoto's rice experiment. If people understood the system, how artificial it is, and they walked away from it, just like that jar of rice, the one that's ignored rots the fastest.
Yeah.
And that is the redirecting of attention, because if this system is built on our attention, if we don't give it attention, it can't exist. And I'm not just saying that because it sounds good, but you proved it with your jar of rice, and anybody can do the same thing. That's verifiable. That's proof. So it doesn't help people to say, well, I'm scared and I'm going to go hide and I'm going to do this. Well, that's great, but how does that create change?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this isn't the world you want to live in, then by God, get up and build it.
Yeah.
Create it.
Yeah, if you don't have any goals, you're definitely going to make them.
Yeah. Have either one of you ever read the book by Osho, Freedom?
No.
No, I haven't.
In the book, he really talks about what real freedom is. And one of the things he mentions that really struck at home for me was he was talking about a revolution, but not a revolution, a revolution of the self, of the mind. And he was comparing how people who, for example, let's just use Fidel. So Fidel Castro overthrows this government that was very oppressive, but then because of the way the energies he used in order to overthrow that government, he himself had to become that oppressor in order to stay in power. So when you use the same means to throw out what you're trying to get rid of, you're just going to replace it.
You cannot fix a problem with the same consciousness that created it, Albert Einstein.
Thank you.
That's exactly right. That's right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening. And so, you know, where's the fear, I guess, in going out and creating the kind of world that you want? You know, where's the fear in that? And I think what I see, I can tell you, I see this a lot in people that I personally know. Even with my intervention in their life, constantly saying, look, you can do this, they don't believe it. You know, it's really hard to get people out of the I don't matter, I can't make a difference, you know. It's a really hard thing to do. Even though it's so simple. The Masaru Emoto rice experiment, I mean, I can't say it enough. I know I sound like a broken record, but anybody can do that and see, oh, yeah. And really, what did you have to do? You had to talk to a jar of rice 3 times a day. You didn't even actually have to go build anything. And it's, you know, and you changed your reality. So,
and it doesn't cost really much to.
No, it doesn't. And a lot of people are missing that, I think. What does it mean to be a co-creator? What does that mean? How does it work? You know, thoughts are very, very powerful. And in some instances, I do feel like people are just kind of skipping the whole personal revolution, which is a right way to look at it, I think, and just jumping right to the quantum stuff, which is, you know, I think for me personally, I think for a lot of people, again, is kind of climbing up some other way, because there's a proper way to get there. And so people are missing that. Why do we have hands? Why do we live in a physical world where we can physically you know, mold a piece of clay into a beautiful piece of pottery, or we can physically grab a paintbrush and create a masterpiece if we're just supposed to sit around and meditate it all away, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yes, the power of intention works. The power of the mind is profound, but it's not just the power of the mind alone that we have the power to work with. It's that we, you know, we're physical beings in a physical world. You know, there's this neat, I was thinking about it a minute ago, and I hope I remember the story right, but it kind of goes back to how do people get past the fear, and I think this is a really beautiful story. Again, it's been a while since I have read it, but I first came across this story in Whitley Strieber's book, The Key, and the stranger, who he referred to as the master of the key, told him this old Hindu story, and I don't know if you guys have heard it, but it's about God and the pig.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard it.
And you haven't heard it? Okay. So God wanted to know what it would be like to be a pig. So he became one. He became a pig, and he was rolling around in the mud, and it felt so cool and so beautiful, and this sty and the slop tasted so good. And the female pigs were so lovely to behold. And the angels came to God, the handmaidens and the helpers of the universe came to God, and they said, God, you must come out of there. You have work to do. And he said, leave me alone. I'm just a simple pig. And so they killed the pig to free him. And then when he was free, he refused to believe that he ever refused to leave. And I think that story is pretty much where a lot of our loved ones are at. They don't know that they are God. And
it's a great story.
I mean, it really is. And so, yeah, I get that death, I think that death, in a sense, is important that way for people because, you know, not something to be feared per se, in the sense, oh my God, I'm going to die, you know, because Nibiru is coming and Planet X and this, that, and the other. But at least there's an out, I guess, right? If for people who forgot.
But you're not advertising suicide either. I just want people to be clear of that.
Oh, no. And because suicide is the reset button. That's the redo. You have to do it all over again. And I've had that conversation with people who've talked about suicide. To me personally, I'm one of those people that, for whatever reason, people will tell me very, very personal things.
Now tell me, bud.
Which is fine. Which is fine because I'm obviously that's part of what I'm here to do is help people work through that stuff. So I don't mind, and I'm very good about making sure it stays confidential. But I've had this conversation with people. They will tell me all of these horrible, awful things that have happened to them. And how they're taking drugs because they're suicidal, or they've been told they're bipolar. And as soon as they bring up the suicide word, I look them square in the face and I say, listen to me. If you think it's bad now, why do you want to do it again? Because if you exit the program early, it starts over. Learn what you can from the experience, see it as an experience, and move on. Because how bad people treated us does not choose for us how we treat other people, right?
Right.
People can't take anything from us if we aren't willing to give it, as far as that goes, in terms of our soul and what we came here to express and the way that we came here to co-create. People can't take that from us. If we hold on to all of that negative energy, we actually, in a way, we kind of stop ourselves from growing, which I think, again, is a really important part of the awakening process because, I mean, I do get really kind of irritated with New Agers who say, oh, it's just love and light and peace, and yeah, you can have that, but you don't go by it. It's not... You know, we're the 32nd generation. I want to have it in 30 seconds or less. But there's a process of work. There's work that a person has to go through because we hold us back. But when a person can realize that, the really beautiful part is that means we move us forward, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's something very important you said with that. One thing I hear a lot of people say is like, oh, you have to hold love, you have to be love, you have to become love. And that's true, but the way I look at it is, in the physical form, Crystal Clark or Tom, you guys aren't trying to be female, or you're not trying to be male, or you're not trying to be human. You just are female. You just are male. You're not trying to become those things. So that's the same way as look as love. It's you shouldn't try to become love. You already are love. You just need to recognize that. Just the same way you, when you're 2-3 years old, you recognize, oh, I have an Audi, she has an Innie. We're different in that.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, you know, the other really neat side of as above, so below, and a lot of this is explained in the first book, because there are four different planes that all of this really applies to. And in this particular sense of the as above, so below, we look at it more from the physical aspect in terms of how astrology can program DNA to behave a certain way or react to certain stimuli a certain way. But on the spiritual plane, the as above really is a reflection of the higher self who chose. And I think, you know, this is something that is somewhat controversial in certain circles, in that people are lining up to hurry up and change their destiny. And maybe I'm already old-fashioned, but if I know that I chose this destiny for myself in a place where I could see everything, where my view was limitless, and I knew all the previous lives that I've lived and the lessons that I've learned, and that this one particular way of living may help me get past a hurdle or help me grow a lot, if I choose that for myself before I come here, and I know that I did that, why would I want to change it? Do you know what I mean? Like, do people trust themselves?
Right.
Did they trust themselves to know the right thing?
Yeah.
And there, you know, for example, there are some people who are right now have illnesses that are karma. They're from past lives, and the way karma is generally explained is that debts have to be paid. Because that's how you learn. You learn through the experience. And there are people that are trying to get out of that. Now, I don't necessarily blame them. Do I think that a person can change their destiny without suffering? I do think that a person can change their destiny without suffering, but that requires a kind of love that a lot of people right now can't experience because of the fear.
Right. Right.
I do think it's possible.
I think one of the biggest fear people have is looking at themselves in the mirror.
That is the biggest fear, I think, for a lot of people, yeah.
I agree. I took 5 years ago, I went to a silent retreat for 10 days and stood in silence. And when I would tell people that, they would be like, I couldn't do that. And I said, yeah, it's not easy. Getting, you know, it's like getting closed in a very small room with someone you really don't like and saying, okay, deal with me. You know, and that's the same way as when you deal in silence. But the payoff is you get in touch with your true sense of self, this inner peace that nothing outside of yourself can really give it to yourself. You just get your mind, everything gets cleared. But you do go through, I have to admit, you do go through a little bit of hell with your own thoughts.
Absolutely. I mean, you take stock of all the things that you've done in your life to other people. I mean, I went through this and I looked at, I mean, even the little minor things that I did.
That, oh, those are the ones that bother the most.
That, you know, I had to forgive myself, and I had to ask forgiveness for those things. And actually, I ended up making quite a few phone calls when I first started this process and apologizing to people. Just, I mean, Man, I know it was 10 years ago, but man, I'm sorry. You know, and it, I don't know, it's such a relief. Such a relief.
Yeah, and it is a relief, but you know, that's also part of the feedback loop, is that it doesn't just affect you, it affects the other person and helps them heal and them get on their way. I mean, there's a great deal of cruelty out there today. People are just so cruel, and I think a lot of it has to do with no FaceTime, not actually being around people in a normal setting beyond school, let's say, or work, where it's a very structured environment and you don't have a lot of time to really interact with other people, and you have all the texting and the emailing, and you know, people will say things to another person online that they would never say to their face.
Yeah.
Or if they're in their car and they're mad, they've had a bad day and they flip you off, they would never do that just walking up to you. It's because it's all fleeting. So the humanity, you know, I know that there's teachings out there that say that, you know, that humans are, you know, because we're human, we're inferior. But I have to tell you that I think that humans are beautiful. I think that we are absolutely magnificent beings. And I think that what I refer to as shadow, this shadow that we have in our lives, is trying to rob us of that, because it is beautiful. It absolutely is beautiful. I mean, you know, people are hilarious. I mean, my husband and I, we laugh constantly because we both have really kind of a dorky sense of humor, and we get each other. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've sat here just talking, just the two of us, no television, just the two of us just hanging out talking. And we laugh so hard, and we look at each other and we think, you know, we should have recorded that and put it on the internet because it was so funny. And other people would think it was funny too. And I think that's the other thing, you know, fear robs people of so many things, but it has to be accepted. And I think the idea that, you know, and it's coming from everywhere now, you know, the Sumerian tablets, we were created as a slave race. Look, I don't buy that. I have never bought that. And I can tell you right now that if I was going to create a slave race, it would not be a human being. Because they can be bossy and mean and do whatever they want anyway, right? You know, I mean, if you look at it from a tyrant perspective and you were going to create a slave race, would you create a human being?
No.
You know, if they can just go off and do whatever they want and say, you know, forget you, I'm going to go over here and build my own world, I'm not going to be your slave. Why would you build something like that for a slave? It doesn't make any sense. And really, when people begin to understand the human body, like we were talking about earlier, when you realize that the glands in our body are not just physical, they are spiritual in that they connect us to the other planets in our solar system in terms of consciousness, the consciousness of the planets, and how we react to that consciousness when it's expressed through us. Are we doing it in a negative way? Are we doing it in a positive way? And things like that. You can see that all of this is very, very elegant. It's very beautifully choreographed. There was nothing negative or sinister about the creating a human body. Human beings were not created to be a slave race.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I see people devolving into a slave race, but we certainly didn't start out that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question that I think it's really important for our listeners and for us ourselves. When there's so much information out there on everything, because, for example, with the stuff that happened here in Japan, everybody and their mother is an expert on nuclear reactors now. Everybody knows, you know, and listen to me because I know, you know. So
right.
When you're listening to information, how, for me and my, for myself, I know when I'm listening to something that's absolute truth, that rings truth to me. But for those people who are still getting in touch with themselves, what is it for you personally that you feel when you know and you have no evidence that what these people are saying or this person is saying is absolute truth or is absolute BS?
Well, there's two different ways to look at it, I think. For me, and I say this all the time, and I say it because I really mean it, but when you understand the sacred science, you can immediately understand when people don't understand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, you just can. You know, and it doesn't really do any good to force the issue, but you just know that they don't know. So, for example, for a while everybody said, well, it's just the sun that causes earthquakes, and then it was the moon that did it. Well, it's not either or, it's all of them. We have other members in the solar system, they're all working together. And then, of course, the collective consciousness of humanity is it's this feedback loop. There's all of this other stuff going on. So whenever anybody says, it's just this one thing, I'm like, okay, I know this person is generally bringing out important information because they specialize. But there's always other stuff going on. So for me, that's the first thing. And once you understand how the sacred science works, then you move beyond truth into possibilities. And that's where the scientific method isn't going to get you very far. And I'll give you an example. I know this is going to sound really far out, but really think about it for a minute. What if splitting the timeline was never possible until somebody told us that it was? Now, what I mean by that is, let's use Dolores Cannon for an example. What she does is very similar to what Edgar Cayce did, in that she works with the oversoul of people. And they give her information. And I'll tell you, and I wrote this in the first book, and this is true for a variety of reasons, but I don't care who it is, no matter what third party it is, whether they're good, bad, or ugly, they are never completely honest, ever. And there's a reason for that. And it's too much to get into now, but they're not, it's not always something sinister. But what if there were entities watching, all these oversouls? When I say entities, let's just go with oversouls. All these oversouls are watching what's happening down here, and they're saying, wow, humanity is splitting right down the middle. You have people that get it, and you have people that don't want to get it. What if we told them that they could split their reality because none of them know they can? So by inserting that idea into, our Akashic record here on this planet, we could say, into the global consciousness, now people can actually do it because they understand that it can be done. Does that make sense? So what I mean is, was it possible to do it before we knew we could do it? Sure. But how are you going to make that happen if you don't know that you can do it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is it the same as like when everybody was telling the Wright brothers that you can't fly and it's impossible to fly, and here are all these sciences that say the reason why you can't fly. And yet once they did it, it just became very easy and people were doing it all over the world.
Yeah, I think it's very similar. Because what the sacred science helps me do is recognize that there is no box. There is no box. But even my imagination, I mean, I'm just one person. So I love to listen to other researchers. I mean, I do it every day. I love to hear what they say, what their hypothesis is, what their, the really neat stuff that they've found. But I don't look at it the way a lot of other people look at it. I look at it through the sacred science because I can see the possibilities in what they're saying. A lot of researchers are all about proof. I need proof. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't mind if people say, hey, we can split a timeline and we can have a whole brand new planet and then have it happen. I mean, you know, don't not try because somebody said you can't. Or where's the empirical evidence? Well, I guess I'll know when I get there. You know, you get to a point where the limitations, you see that there are no limitations. The limitation is the mind. So I think that sometimes we get help when there are so many things that are possible, but until the idea is introduced as a possibility, it will never manifest because we don't direct the energy that way.
Right. Got to have a goal.
Yeah, goals are important. They're really important. And, you know, we talked about this a little in the last show, the one that didn't record, but just so people don't get confused and go back and listen to another show and it's not there, but what's really happening now is a free will war. Choices are being withheld because a free-willed being is not going to make a choice it does not know it has. And I think that's really important, and that's why I encourage people to learn the sacred science, because there are no limitations. It's infinite. You learn the pattern of how it works, but it's infinite in scale. It just goes on and on and on and on. It never stops. I mean, it's really, really incredible. And so I don't know why people want to sit around and be scared all day. I think truthfully, it really does go back to what we talked about earlier, in that people are afraid to face themselves.
Yeah.
But they really are going to have to at some point. They can do it now at this incredibly wonderful time in our existence when all these new energies are coming in. And that's the other thing, too. The possibilities we had before, even from our perspective, didn't look like limitations, right? But with these new energies coming in, well, now we really have, it's kind of like, you know, if you only had two colors of Play-Doh, well, now you've got, you know, like 10. You can make a lot of really neat stuff out of that. And, I just feel like people are missing the co-creative part of being a co-creator. And, yeah, you know, we've all at some point in our life done stupid stuff that we regret, and if you can go back and make it right, then go back and make it right, but get over it and get on with your life. Get with your real life as a co-creator. Go out and start creating the kind of world that you want to see. And I'll tell you, if I ever see people in I don't really know what to call it anymore, really, the New Age community, if I ever see people like that posturing to be president someday, I think I'm going to fall out of my chair, because I would think that a person who really is very spiritually aware would recognize we shouldn't have a president, you know. Right. So it's just kind of simple things like that, but the lessons are very personal for everyone.
Right. Well, I think the key here out of this show is that you need to realize that you do have a soul. And truly know that within your heart. That's the first step. As soon as you know that, then the vision comes.
Yeah. With me, one of the things I've learned, I started learning before I started the show, and with the show being exposed to all the different the people we've interviewed, and also just the guest and everything. The listeners, I meant to say, is that awareness and frequency, and what I mean by frequency is the vibration, those two things have really, for me personally, it's the key, you know, because as you're raising your frequency, your awareness just grows, and as you become more aware of things, your frequency grows.
Well, you know what? I think the choice always has to be put into that equation, because being aware that you can use HAARP to heal every person on the planet doesn't mean that's what it gets used for, right?
Yeah.
Being aware that it has that potential doesn't make it happen. It's the choice, and the choice is indicative of the frequency. Do we use it for love, or do we use it for slavery? And those are very, very different choices, and they each carry a very different frequency.
Yeah. But I mean, also being in the same note, being aware that you that there is a harp and that they're using it for this, and then having the awareness to, you know, move it out of your area, is also a big, because you know, most people, the average person I personally know outside of this genre, I would never say those things to, because they'll probably, you know, get me locked up for saying that, you know, I can move clouds and things like that. That I have moved clouds, you know. And
yeah, well, you know, what if we said, can you believe these dummies built this big machine and turned it on without knowing what it can do? Well, guess what? There's 7 billion of those machines on the planet that are turned on right now and don't have any idea what they can do.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, they're already on. They're just being used by people who do know what they can do, and they're being used for those purposes. But it's your own machine. You know, take it back and use it yourself.
Yeah.
Right? That's, you know, get your power back. Take it back. It belongs to you.
So we want to give you the chance. Is there anything, if you had to say to the listeners one thing, like most important, what would it be? And also give out your information, how people can get in contact with you and get your books and stuff.
I think the most important thing that I could ever say to another human being is, I think there's two, and I think the first one is, don't be afraid to remember who you are. That would be the first thing. And then the second thing is, recognize who you are for what it is, and that's God. See that face staring back at you in the mirror and recognize who it is you're looking at. Recognize it. Own it. Own it. And then live it, right? Live it. So I think that's the most important thing. You know, love is what created all of this. That's what love did, all of this. That we were not slaves. We are a shard of the Creator. We're down here so that we can learn how to create and carry on the tradition of creation with love. That's what we're here for. The website is www.thesoulsociety.com. That's thesoulsociety.com. And I want to remind people about the Soul Project. There's a link on the website, and it's just people who have, you know, the material has touched them in some way, and they really want to just give. There's a remote healer. There's a woman who does natal numerology charts. There's a woman who does, she does hands-on healing. In her case, you'd have to know her location. She lives out in California. There's a gentleman who helps set up websites and blogs and writing, and it's all free. These people just they recognize what their gifts are, and they want to give them out. And these people, the stories that they send me sometimes are so beautiful about the people that they find, how they needed each other, what they gave to this person, the other person wanted, but then the other person had something that they wanted, and it just works. It works so beautifully. If we could just give, it works really, really beautifully. So don't forget about those folks. And I'm also so proud of both of you, because you're doing the same thing, offering your healing, Ramon, and your tarot readings, Tom. And tarot readings, I think, really help people get on their path. I don't know why people get kind of tweaked out about tarot because they think it's evil, but it's a one-law technology. It works because it has to work. That's why it works. It's resonance. That's all it is. But it reflects the individual back to themselves without the ego in the way, which is why it's such a great tool, right? And so I think that tarot readings are really a great way to get people started.
Yep, absolutely.
Because you don't know them, so you're not going to, you know, overlay any personal feelings. And I think it really helps when truths people don't want to face come from a stranger, because they know a truth when they hear it, you know. It just reaffirms that they already know. And but it's helpful to have that reaffirmation. Yeah, okay, I need to do this, so.
Yeah.
And the third book won't be out until the fall, so.
Boo.
You know.
Okay, well, everybody knows the website, www.conscious-tv.com. And we have been, we actually put up quite a few more videos. I kind of redid the video page, so it's a little bit easier to navigate. You don't have to go through all the videos to find all the new stuff.
So there's hours and hours of stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think we have enough stuff there where anytime you want to turn on the TV and you get tired of it, you can just go on our website and watch. I also been in the video link on the entertainment section, I've been putting a lot of fluffy stuff. I know we always talk about everything is not fluffy, but it sometimes you need the little cutesy stuff, like that story with the dog that saved the other dog. That's just amazing.
Yeah, I saw that. I know what you're talking about. That video was neat. And it's, you know, humans are beautiful. I mean, people do a lot of really funny stuff. And yeah, that part of it's important too.
Yeah. So, Tom, anything else before we...
No, I think that's about it for tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. And thank you very much, Crystal, for joining us once again. We love you so much.
I love you guys.
And thank you, Don. Thank you, Don and Seth, for giving us that extra hour. We really appreciate it. And Crystal, can you send me over some pizza?
I will airmail that right over.
All right, everybody.
You want pepperoni or not?
Have a good night.
Good night,
everybody. Okay, bye.
I've had to straight ahead the trend from uptown. You know my sound is major. I know you like the lyrics, kid, so just do me your favor. Tell the tech to turn my dad up. This is a pack up. Hey, I don't back up. Because I wanna dive in and swim in the mentals. Where your thoughts roam. I wanna make the dough my home. Therefore, you'll never be alone. But when you hear my song, sing along with the rhythm. Cause I got made the fat beats that I get from. Yes, it's the ears and I'm checking out the blonde one. Maybe I can have one. Maybe I can cut one. I'm one with God, brothers. It's hard to stay straight until you're scared straight, and then you can't wait to get out. Then you shout, damn, I got freedom. Unless it's being taught, black man, I know you need one. The right time to make you free your mind. Wake up. Tell the artist not to be creative. You see, the motive is to control more than this. Hit the synapse in the soul, and I bring much more than your average MC. Please give me a break, man.